Now is the time, episode 37. I'm Caleb Succo, and this is the podcast where we talk about how we can use our lives right now to worship our God. All right, friends, welcome to another episode of Now is the Time, and we are back this week. We are still in Ukraine. We thank the Lord for that every day, more than once a day, that we are still here in Ukraine. And today, you know, I want to talk to you about how war changes your outlook on life. Changes your perspective, changes the way that you see things, the way you perceive things, the way you react to things. Because the reality is war brings out sometimes the worst in people and sometimes the best in people. But whatever it does, it changes how we view the world around us. And some of these changes are really, you know, they're pretty significant. And I think that it is important that we look at how this changes our perspective, because what I've found is this not only affects our daily life, our everyday life, the things we do, the things we say, and things like that, but it also affects our worship. It affects our church. It affects how we understand God's word and how we relate to God as well. It even reflects on how we do ministry and how we bring the gospel message to others. So that's what I want to talk about in today's episode of Now is the Time. And let me give you a couple reminders before we get into the content for today. First of all, I've got a few links in the show notes for this episode. This is episode 37. And I want to remind you that you can download this podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher. I personally use iTunes, and you can download it there. And if you would like to leave a review, I'd appreciate it, because that does help get the podcast out in front of more people that might be interested in listening and benefit from the content that I have here on Now is the Time. So check it out on iTunes or on Stitcher. Both those links are in the show notes. Also, I want to remind you that my book, What If? How to Kill Worry and Anxiety Before They Kill You, is available for pre-order on Kindle now. So I know that many of you have bought the paperback book, and I thank you for that. Those funds that were received from the purchase of those books, they've all gone into ministry in Ukraine. And so they've already been a great help to the ministry here in Ukraine. But also I know that many have been waiting for the Kindle version. So the Kindle version will be released on the 19th. That is next week. And so it's a week from today, actually. So pre-order it now. And the more people that pre-order it, the better, because, again, it does kind of the same thing. It helps it become more visible on Amazon. And I've definitely heard a lot of good responses from that book. And, you know, I'm probably going to write a little explanation later on my blog about why I wrote that book, because a lot of people think that I wrote it in response to the crisis, to the war, and all this craziness that's going on in Ukraine now. But the truth is, I began writing that long before the war. But, you know, it's just amazing how God directs you. Sometimes you look back and you see, wow, that was definitely the hand of God, and there was a reason that I did that. So be looking for that in the future. But anyway, you can get that. The link is in the show notes for What If? How to Kill Worry and Anxiety Before They Kill You. The Kindle version is available for pre-order and will be released on Friday, the 19th of September. I think that's a Friday. Yeah, pretty sure. And let's see, two more things. If you've read my book, I really do want to hear from you, okay? So you can just go to sukofamily.org/what if. That's what if, the name of the book. And there you can find a little form to give me a response. You can also find some links to share the book. And also you can leave a review for the book on Amazon. So would appreciate it if you did that. Just sukofamily.org/what if. And finally, if you do have a question for me, I also want to hear your question. And I have set up a little page on our website. It's sukofamily.org/ask. sukofamily.org/ask. Or, and you can call me straight from that webpage. You can just click the button on your computer and record a voice message right from that webpage. Or, if you prefer, you can give me a call and leave me a voicemail. And the phone number is 747-221-6478. 747-221-6478. So you can either go to the webpage, sukofamily.org/ask, or just call that phone number. Either way works. And I will answer your question. And I love to get those voice messages because it's great. You can put them on the podcast and it's a benefit for everyone. All right. So anyway, those are the updates. Let's get back to the content here. I was walking home from work the other day. This was literally 2 days ago, walking home from work. Saw a helicopter fly over. It looked like a military helicopter. Actually, I don't even know for sure if it was a military helicopter, but it certainly looked like it. And, you know, it was kind of crazy because here are my first thoughts when I saw that helicopter. First, I thought, okay, is something going on in Odessa? Are they responding to some sort of an attack or something like that in Odessa? That was like my first thought. Second thought was, wait, is this even a Ukrainian helicopter? Maybe this is a Russian helicopter. Maybe the Russians are already invading. Maybe they've flown across from Crimea and they're coming straight into Odessa. I don't know. And then my third thought was, wait, are they coming from the conflict zone or are they going towards the conflict zone? And all those thoughts, they played out within, you know, just a matter of, I don't know, you know, say 10 seconds or maybe 5 seconds in my mind. It all just happened very quickly. But I started thinking about that because it's kind of interesting. Because if a helicopter flew over in the United States, I wouldn't have those thoughts. And it made me realize that my thought processes have kind of changed just living in a country where there's war within the borders of our country. And certainly it is something that people here think about and talk about on a daily basis more than once. And it's hard to... I mean, any significant conversation that I've had with people, it's hard to avoid the subject. I say it's like having a bad rash, you know, and you try not to think about it. You try not to scratch it. You try to pretend it's not there, but no matter what you do, it won't let you forget that it is around. And that's what it's kind of like here. It's in the back of the mind of everyone. It's sort of plane. And there is something that changes your outlook on life when you know that your country is at war. And not just, I think there's a difference here because, I mean, I've lived in the United States when the United States was at war in Iraq, let's say, or in Afghanistan. But that felt completely different because it was not on our shores. The enemy had not crossed. I mean, you could argue, yes, when 9/11 happened, it did. But really, we were not fighting a prolonged war within the United States. And that's what's happening in Ukraine here. So how does that change your perspective? When you're in wartime and you realize, how does that change your perspective? Here, the first thing that I noticed is it changes priorities. And I mentioned this a little bit before, just kind of the change in priorities. But it's amazing to me that those things that we feel are so important to our lives, that are so vital to a vibrant and wonderful life, when you are faced with war, when you are faced with extreme hardship, they vanish so quickly, it's hard to imagine. And what I mean by that is they cease to become important to people. And what I'm talking about is, the importance of you know, getting rid of that extra 10 pounds or shopping for the latest fall fashions or making sure that you're at home in time to watch the latest episode of your favorite TV show, whatever it happens to be. And those things just vanish when greater things are put at risk. And in a way, that change of priorities is good, because what it does is it really wakes up the soul. It wakes up the soul. It sort of boils life down to the basics. It removes just that, let's call it a fog of prosperity and pleasure. That tends to fog the glasses that we wear and not allow us to see clearly what are truly the most vital things in life. And so what you have is that when people live in wartime, they are uniquely focused on one thing, and that is staying alive. And really that can look differently, because sometimes it means protecting yourself. And sometimes it means sacrificing yourself for the protection of others. But that's what they're focused on, is staying alive and also on keeping their freedoms. And, you know, I've seen that this focus of this really sort of elimination of superfluous priorities has been healthy for the church. Because what I've seen in churches in eastern Ukraine is that they're no longer concerned with some of these peripheral issues like sermon or music styles and how long the sermon is and all of these kinds of things that we tend to get taken up with. And instead, their time is consumed on ministry, taking care of the poor, the helpless, feeding the hungry, taking care of the elderly, the disabled, and preaching the gospel to those who are spiritually broken. And they're just consumed with this type of ministry because they see the great need and they see with such clarity, because all those other peripheral things have been ripped away from them. They see through their pain what God has really called them to do. And even in that pain and agony, there's beauty. And there's sort of this ache in the soul that says, Lord, how can I serve? What can I do? And we've seen people rise up. We've seen churches rise up to serve where they had been apathetic before. So definitely a change in priorities is something that wartime really brings. And that's the first thing. Second thing is wartime throws your long-term plans out the window. And I have to admit, I grew up in the United States, and from an early age, I was always taught the vital importance of planning everything, of planning your next week, your next month, your next year. And I've been in meetings where there's been 5-year planning sessions and planning out 10 years, what we're going to happen what's going to happen and how we're going to do this and how much money it's going to cost and all of the numbers and crunching them. And we can make these beautiful plans far into the future. And sometimes we're pretty good at doing that. But what I've realized is that all that planning is based on one primary assumption, You know what that is? That assumption is that everything will remain the same. That the economy will remain the same. That the government will more or less remain the same. That my church, the people who are there will sort of be there, and they'll give the same amount, and they'll do the same amount, and all these things, we assume that it's just going to keep going on as it's been going on, and we plan with that assumption. And in war, no one assumes that everything will just keep going on as it always has, because it already, it's the end, it stopped. And if you check out the show notes for this episode, I encourage you to do it. Sukofamily.org/37. I included two pictures. One is of Lugansk Airport. I think it was a picture just taken like 24 hours ago. And the other is a picture that was taken earlier this year. And that is a stark contrast. Because the picture that was taken just 24 hours ago, I mean, it's just nothing. It's just a burned out shell of nothing. You can hardly recognize what it is. And yet earlier this year, it was an international airport. I mean, it looked like a nice new European standard airport. And I just wanted to include those just to help you realize that these areas of eastern Ukraine, Lugansk, Donetsk, I mean, these were large, fully functioning cities earlier this year. And now they've been taken down to nothing. Lugansk, no power, no water. I mean, buildings leveled. Half the population gone, at least. Things change fast. And so war teaches us that everything is really temporary, especially peace. It also teaches us that everything is conditional. And so sometimes the saying here is when people leave, they say, "I'll see you later if the Russians don't come." You know, then you realize, yeah, hopefully you will. You know, I think James says it well in James chapter 4, verse 13 and 14. Where he says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What's your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes." Wow. That idea of a mist is so realized in wartime. And concern is no longer for a year from now, or even several months from now. The concern is for today. Will I live through today? The concern is for tomorrow. Where will I find food tomorrow? Will they bomb us tomorrow? That's what the concern is in wartime. So it definitely it messes up your plans, but at the same time, it drives you to put your faith fully in God, because you realize that the best, most well-laid plans mean nothing, because I don't have control over those tanks. I don't have control over those grad missiles. I don't have control over those rebels with the AK-47s. But God does. So it changes the whole idea of making plans, long-term plans. And then the last idea that I want to share with you, and I think this is probably the most important, is it changes, or it gives you a new take, a new understanding of what peace is. It really gives you a new understanding of peace. I mean, let's be honest here. Peace is one of those words that people throw around. And in general, there are exceptions, but in general, you're not going to find someone that will just disagree with you and say, "No, I don't want peace," right? Almost everyone says, yes, we want peace. We're for peace. Talk to anyone in Ukraine. They will tell you that Ukraine needs peace, that they're for peace. Talk to the separatist. They will tell you they are for peace. Talk to Putin. He will tell you he's for peace. Talk to Poroshenko. He will tell you he's for peace. Talk to Obama. He will tell you he is for peace. But there is no peace. How can that be? Everyone wants peace. It's the greatest goal. It's the greatest desire of everyone. But there is no peace. Why don't we have it? If everyone wants it, why don't we have it? Here's the thing. Wanting peace is never enough. Desiring peace and telling others how much you want it does not bring peace to anyone. And I want to use this example. It's like what happens sometimes in our house. My kids say, Dad, I'm hungry. I want something to eat. And then someone else says, I'm hungry too. I want something to eat. And I might even say, I'm hungry. I want something to eat. Does that create food on the table? Does that prepare a meal? The fact that everyone in the house wants something to eat? No. Because if everyone in the house wants something to eat, and yet there's no food in the fridge or in the cupboard, then we will all be hungry, unless somebody does something about it. If everyone wants something to eat, but no one is willing to do a thing, if no one is willing to even get up and slice some bread or make some soup or heat up something in the microwave, we will have nothing to eat. The desire to eat does not create food, nor does the desire for peace create peace. You see where I'm coming from? In order to create peace, see, here, that's the thing. Even the word create, you have to understand, that's work, right? Peace isn't something that just naturally exists in the air we breathe. Peace is created. Peace is earned. Peace is made. Peace requires hard work. Peace requires sacrifice. In order for there to be peace, there must be those who are willing to sacrifice and work for that peace. That's the first requirement. But it's not the only problem here. There's a second problem. See, people do want peace. I believe it. When people say they want peace, I believe they want peace. Many people do. Now, maybe some people are not quite so honest, but many people do. Unfortunately, here's the problem. People want peace on their own terms. So they want peace as long as their requirements are met. They want peace as long as it means the other side has satisfied them. And that kind of wanting for peace does not lend itself to peace because it will never happen until one side submits to the other side. And, you know, the conclusion that I've really come to on this whole thing is this. I think eventually there will be peace because eventually one side in this conflict is going to win out. One side is going to win out. I pray that it's Ukrainian side. I pray that Ukraine is able to keep its country intact. But no matter how peace comes to Ukraine or who is the victor in this war, it will be a temporary peace, just like the current ceasefire is temporary. Why? Because all peace is temporary that is brought by finite temporary leaders. Our leaders are limited. They're limited in their lifespan. They're limited in their ability to provide anything, nonetheless peace. And so I pray for Ukraine. I pray that there will be peace in eastern Ukraine. I pray that soon I will be able to go and visit my brothers and sisters in Christ in Lugansk and Donetsk and in other towns in eastern Ukraine, that I will be able to preach the gospel there, that I will be able to worship with them, that I will be able to pray with them freely without worrying about war or bullets or anything else. But I also know that that peace will be temporary. It will be temporary. But I know another truth. And that is that Jesus can provide permanent peace. And this war has really given me a new perspective on Jesus as a political ruler. And I was just reading over a verse of scripture from Isaiah recently. And it really struck me the significance of Jesus coming as a wonderful counselor, of Jesus taking the government upon his shoulder, the mighty God, the everlasting Father, and then these wonderful words, the Prince of Peace. Won't that be wonderful when finally Jesus comes and he brings a peace that will never go away? And friends, let me tell you something. He is starting that peace right now. He's starting that peace in the lives and in the hearts of those who believe in him, and he will perfect it. He will complete it later. And the time is coming when Jesus will not only rule hearts, but he will rule cities. He will rule the universe with perfect righteousness and perfect peace. And what a day that will be, and how I long for it.